Hello and welcome once again to the Learning Digital Photography Podcast. You're listening to episode number 68. On this month's show, we're sitting down with Laura Hsu, getting her thoughts, feedback, and insights on the latest and greatest from Adobe Lightroom 4 and all its wonder and glory. We're going to talk to her about the facets, features, and the what she thinks the best ones are when it comes to making the move to this new software platform. Well, that's coming up after this, so don't go away. Hello and welcome once again to the Learning Digital Photography Podcast. You are listening to episode number 68, I think we're on. 68 is the episode number, and we are talking with Laura Hsu. For those of you that may not know, Laura Hsu is an educator and a trainer on Adobe products, and her biggest product line is Lightroom. You're primarily on the Lightroom series, right, Laura?
That's correct. I also teach Photoshop and plan to introduce a Photoshop series, but I've been focusing mostly on Lightroom because that's where I do most of my work these days.
Right. I think that's where a lot of photographers are moving to for their workflow as well. But yeah, so you're coming on the show. We're going to be talking a little bit about Lightroom 4, and it just got released last week. So welcome to the show, first off.
Thank you very much. It's great to be here and great to finally be chatting with you, Jason. We've been tweeting for a long time.
Exactly. Tweeting and emailing, trying to get the schedules set up here. So we're finally on the phone with, well, I shouldn't say phone, we're on Skype with one another, because that's how you do podcasts these days. And like I said, we've been talking about Lightroom 4, which just got released last week from Adobe. And Laura, you have a DVD set that's coming. Is it out yet? Is your DVD set out, the video series?
Yes, it is. It came out on March 6th.
Excellent. So March 6th, Laura Hsu put out a video series that... And, how did you define this? Would you define this as a set of videos that train you on Lightroom 4? Is it informational videos? How would you classify this whole video series?
Yeah, I consider it a workshop on DVD or a workshop on video.
So it's definitely educational. It's
definitely educational. It consists of 55 videos, 10 and a half hours of training. And it all started out... I teach a two-day Lightroom fundamentals workshop in person. And with Lightroom 3, I thought, why not record it on video so that my students can refer back to it and maybe I can sell a few as well. In the process of making it, I ended up covering significantly more than I cover in that two-day series. And now with the Lightroom 4 version, I've added another 3 hours of training. But my goal... I don't try to cover every button in Lightroom. My goal is to give students as strong of a foundation as I can in the core of the program.
Right. And I think that's something critical. We actually had talked about this offline, about the difference between giving people a foundation to build on versus a template or a boilerplate on how to achieve effect A or effect B, or, you know, like a quick tip kind of thing. This is definitely more than a quick tip series. You're not going to learn how to get the grungy look. You're not going to learn how to get a specific effect out of a particular image. It's more about learning how to use Lightroom in your post-production workflow.
Right. And once you understand the tools in the develop module, then you'll be able to create your own looks. So,
exactly. Yeah. Exactly. And that's the thing, is I see so many people that go out and they'll buy presets or, you know, stuff like that that you can incorporate into your workflow, and then they'll just leave the preset alone. And I'm like, what are you doing? It's just a starting point.
Exactly.
You got to tweak that to your own ends. You can't just use someone else's look, because then how can you really call that your own?
Exactly. And I also encourage people to use the presets as learning opportunities. You know,
right.
Apply a preset and then look at the develop settings to see what they did so that you can build your own and like I said, get your own looks.
Right. Yeah, I think the whole thing is somewhat analogous to teaching someone how to fish versus giving them a fish.
Absolutely.
And I think this whole series, and it kind of threw me, because she said, would you like to look at some of the video series before we talk? And I said, sure. So I started thinking it was going to be, you know, maybe an hour, two, three, 4 hours of videos. And then I saw there were 55 videos. Like, what is it, 13, 14 hours of
it's
training 10
and
material?
A half hours of training.
10 and a half hours of training? Okay. So 10 and a half hours. And I'm so sorry, because I did not get a chance to go through every single video.
I mean, since I sent it to you at 8 o'clock last night,
Was it last night? Oh, geez. Yeah. So I went through most of them. I scrubby slided a few of them because obviously I've had the ability to go through a little bit of the Lightroom 4 stuff myself as well. So that comes from doing software reviews and doing these tutorials and educational series. So you get the benefit of a little bit of advance notice. Probably not as much as folks like the guys over at Kelby Training and Lynda.com and all that. But we did get a chance to take a look at this stuff a little early, which is why we're able to sit down and talk about it somewhat intelligently here anyway, on my part, probably more intelligently on Laura's part. So yeah, look for her DVD series, her workshop DVD, over on her website, which is Laura.
LauraShoe.com. That's LauraShoe.com.
LauraShoe.com is her website, and that's where you can purchase the entire 55 video series.
Yeah, just,
and it's.
Oh, I'm sorry.
No, go ahead.
Oh, just a couple more comments. First, I don't want people to be overwhelmed by the idea that there's 55 videos. They're split up into a very logical sequence, and I have recommendations for beginners on which ones are critical to watch first and learn before you continue on in the series.
My recommendation there is to watch the first three.
Yes.
There's like a 1, a 1A, and a 2. And if you watch those first three, that's a great primer to really get things launched. And then you can figure out if you had Lightroom 3, which obviously I had, but if you had Lightroom 3 and you know where the changes are between Lightroom 3 and Lightroom 4 and that's all you really need to cover, you can hop around.
Absolutely.
And they're very easily digestible. The longest one, I think, is what, like 23 minutes?
Yeah, I believe that's correct, yeah.
Or something like that. So they're fantastic videos. Very straightforward, down to earth. She doesn't breeze through this stuff super fast. It's not like da-da-da-da-da-da-da, and then all of a sudden you're done. You don't remember what the heck she talked about for the first couple of minutes because it's a good pace. I really like the pace that she had set there. And this kind of speaks to what we were talking about with education versus training. It's more of an educational series,
definitely.
I think.
And the other point that I was just going to make is whether you're interested in the DVD series or not, over at LauraShoe.com, I've got a Lightroom and occasionally Photoshop blog that has lots and lots of tutorials and free videos and other resources.
The free stuff is of the same quality, too. So what you see in her free video series is indicative of what you'll see in the DVD sets as well. So, so definitely take a look at that if you'd like a little, I guess, sample or teaser of what you can expect to get if you get the entire series. It's a fantastic series of videos. I'd venture to say it's better than pretty much anything else I've seen out there. It's really extensive too, and you don't have, like I said, you don't have to watch all the videos if there's only bits and pieces you want to pick up on. But everything is there if you like. I mean, you go from everything to edit, doing the round trip to Photoshop, publishing services. I'm looking through all the titles here. Publishing services. You talk about the new email feature. One thing I particularly liked is that you spent a lot more time than most people do on the map module. You had 4 parts.
Mm-hmm.
Just to cover the map module, and I think that was extremely helpful in helping to understand not only what it is, but why it's so useful and advantageous. Because when it first came out, frankly, when I was looking at it, I'm like, I don't care about the GPS coordinates. You know, why would I care? I live in Colorado. I know all my photos are in Colorado. And then the more I started watching these videos, I was like, well, she makes a good point. Maybe I should look at using that.
That's exactly the way I felt. It's like, well, it's kind of pretty to see those pins on the map, but,
Exactly.
But,
exactly.
It is very powerful. Now, I will just throw out that what's not in this video series are the output modules. That will be a second series that I'm currently working on. So
right. And something else to look forward to as well. And then you just also told me something else offline. You said something else coming up at the end of March.
Yes, I'm going to be doing a 3-day workshop online with Creative Live. If you haven't heard of Creative Live, they're at creativelive.com, and they offer free multi-day photography workshops. So check that out. I'm really excited about that.
Do you have the dates for that yet? Do you know when that's going to happen?
Yes, it's March 29th through 31st.
29th through 31st. And I will be attending a wedding, so I will not be able to participate in that. Not my own. I'm already married.
Oh, yeah.
Someone else is getting married, and it's a family thing, so I kind of got to go. But
I understand.
Definitely, Definitely look for that, the Creative Live series at the end of March, 28th, 29th. What'd you say, 29th through the
31st?
29th through the 31st. I almost said the 28th. 29, 30, 31 will be the Creative Live series. And I will add a link in the show notes for all this stuff. So if you're listening to us during your workout or commute, don't feel like you have to stop your workout or drive and text at the same time to make note of this, because we will include the show notes. So yeah, that's something that's exciting to mention is the DVD series. You said the output module is going to be a second series, the Creative Live series. But let's kind of shift gears away from the whole promotional and marketing thing. Let's actually talk about Lightroom 4 for a little bit, if we could. Yeah. Take some time. One of the things people like, at least I like when I'm looking at and listening to content, is finding out the nuts and bolts of it. And for me, the nuts and bolts always boils down to either 3, 4, or 5 different things. And when it comes to new software, you know, there's always like the pitch, you know, hey, check out this new blah 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 in blah 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 software, you know, and they'll pick and choose the biggest updates to the software program, whatever software it is. So with that in mind, I thought it might be helpful to take a couple minutes and just talk about either our favorite things, or you think the most popular things or most needed things that came to this latest iteration of Lightroom as a program.
Absolutely.
So Laura, if you'd like to start off with what do you want to call them 5 favorite things? Let's go with 5. Our 5 favorite updates to Lightroom 4.
Now, I just want to qualify this by saying that if you talk to 20 different people, they're going to end up with different things, because there's a lot in Lightroom 4 for everybody. But, you know, we're going to be more interested in some things than others, and it's really going to vary across people.
Yeah, of course.
For me, the new Develop module basic panel controls are huge. Now, they don't look very exciting. They're just exposure and highlights and shadows, sliders. You know, you already had tools in Lightroom 3. But these are a lot more powerful. So to get more detail from your highlights, to isolate your shadows more, simply to have more control and get more dynamic range out of your photo, these controls are great. They're also more intuitive for new users. Unfortunately, for users that are used to Lightroom 3, it takes a little bit of time to get used to them. And I speak from experience on that one. I did appreciate them up front. But once you get used to them, you're going to see that they're really powerful.
I definitely agree with the first two there. I think the first one where you said you can bring in more highlight and shadow detail and then spoke to dynamic range, that kind of alludes to the whole HDR phenomenon that we saw in photography from... 2 years ago, 3 years ago, whenever that first started coming out as a popular look. I really do think HDR is here to stay. And people are enjoying having a wider dynamic range in their photos wherever they present them, whether it's on the web, whether it's in print, you know, however you're presenting your photos, the wider dynamic range it's here to stay.
Mm-hmm.
And because of that, the ability to make those adjustments native to Lightroom without going to a third-party app is huge.
Definitely.
So I totally agree with that one.
And think of those wedding shooters, you know, that are shooting everything from the bride's white dress to the groom's black suit. To be able to get more detail out of both ends of that is, you know, like you said, it's huge. So
I definitely think that's a game changer. Yeah. And then the second point you mentioned was that they were more intuitive. The interface is a lot more intuitive. Totally agree with that. Totally agree with that. It makes much more, and like you said, it was a little bit of a struggle at first if you're used to LR3, but in the end, the result is a lot cleaner workflow, in my opinion, as well.
Yeah, exactly.
So that's the first two. What else would you say was a great update?
That was just number one. I gotta have them to fit in more here. So develop panel basic controls, the new additions to the adjustment brush and the graduated filter, to be able to control white balance locally, noise reduction locally, highlights and shadows locally, to me is huge. Think of those mixed lighting situations, to be able to correct those easily is huge. So,
yeah, I definitely agree with you. You actually spoke to that in one of your videos, I think, when you were talking about I think it was on your develop module video where you had that drummer that had kind of the blue tint to him,
right?
From the main player, And it was amazing how much granular control you could have over white balance with that. I think that was a great example of how it can be beneficial, because when you have different lighting, especially in like concert photography, that's a great example where that local white balance adjustment brush is so helpful. So that's number two then, I guess,
that's
right?
Number two.
Number three.
Number three for me would be soft proofing in the develop module. Now, it's not a beginner topic. You know, I know a lot of people don't know what soft proofing is, but it basically allows you to preview or get a better idea of what your photo is going to look like in output. So if you're printing with profiles, or if you're simply exporting your photos as copies, as JPEG copies, you're generally exporting those in sRGB, which is a smaller color space than you're working with in Lightroom. What that means is that your really richly saturated colors are going to get muted in output. So that constant question of why do my photos look washed out when I export them? They looked great in Lightroom. You're going to be able to preview that in the develop module with soft proofing and make further adjustments to make the photo look as good as possible before you output it.
Totally agree with that. And I think the important thing that Laura brought to the table here with regard to soft proofing is traditionally most people have taken the term soft proofing to mean proofing before you go to print a photo. And traditionally that has been the case, because in the history of photography, how long has been presenting a portfolio online been around? Not nearly as long as presenting a printed portfolio. So the traditional mindset is that soft proofing refers just to looking how it's going to, like a print preview, so to speak. But soft proofing, like Laura just said, also ties into JPEG exports, because you can, like she said, this is awesome, that you can get that washed out color look when you do an export to JPEG. And it's such a common question. How often do you get that question, Laura?
Oh, probably once a week.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a pretty regular one. So the soft proofing applies to JPEG exporting too. It's not just for printing, I guess is the best way to say
absolutely.
That. So yeah, that's number three was the soft proofing. Number four for you, Laura?
Number four would be the map module. I dismissed it and made fun of it in the beginning. But so the map module allows you to view your photos on the map and assign GPS location to photos. So if your camera assigns GPS location already, then in the map module, you'll see those photos on the map. Otherwise, you can drag your photos to the map to assign GPS location. So that's the who cares part of it for me. But the really exciting part is that once you do assign GPS location by dragging, for example, Lightroom can automatically populate country, state, city, and sometimes sublocation in the metadata for your photo. So you no longer have to assign location keywords to your photos if you use this functionality, which is called reverse geocoding.
Right.
So that's what all of a sudden makes the map module really convenient. Go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say the funny thing about the map module, I actually went back to my blog post when the beta was first announced, and the very first bullet point I had was maps module, yawn. Other software does this already. And then after watching Laura's tutorials and playing with it myself to a greater degree, this is more than, like she said, it's more than just putting pins on a map to show where the photo was taken. It really can enhance your metadata. And one thing I used to always do actually with my photos, because I live in Colorado, but I used to live in South Carolina. I've spent a lot of time down in Mexico during my travels. I've got another trip to Hawaii coming up next year. So all these different, if you're doing any kind of travel photography, having that metadata in there is very helpful. Cause say if I wanted to do a search for Mexico or Cabo San Lucas or anything like that, I have to type that metadata in.
Exactly.
The advantage here, like so Laura said, is with the maps module, you don't have to type that in anymore. It'll populate that for you just by dragging it to the map. So that's kind of changed my mind on the map module as well. I'm like, not as much a yawner as I thought.
Yeah, exactly. So, and it's also a way to find your photos visually. You can go to the map.
Right.
If you click on a pin, let's say that pin is your Oaxaca photos, it automatically selects those photos. So you could take that selection of photos and then jump to the slideshow module or jump to the library module and keyword the photos. So it can speed up your workflow in that way as well.
How did you know I went to Oaxaca?
Everybody goes to Oaxaca.
Oh, everybody. Okay, everybody goes. Well, I was like, okay, maybe we should just end this podcast. No, I'm kidding. So, okay, the map module definitely one of the more popular updates in Lightroom 4, and it is number 4. So, what's your last one that you'd say is one of your favorite updates?
From here, I start speculating on what people are going to be interested in more, but I have to say that the book module is very exciting to me. I don't, you know, this is one again where it's like, well, that's kind of cool, but I don't really do blurb books. So, and nothing against blurb, it's just that I don't generally make books. So, another yawn. But it also...
Another yawn. I shouldn't have said that initially.
Yeah, right.
Anyway.
So, but number one, once I saw how easy it is, to use and how powerful it is, what kind of books that I can make. My thought that I'll never make blurb books has gone away. You know, I really do think that I'm going to have reasons to use this to make books. Also, though, I can make PDFs. So I could design a PDF to be shared on an iPad, for example. There aren't specifically formatted templates right now, you know, with a particular size of the iPad, but there are workarounds at this point. But it's a very well designed module. It takes a little bit of time to learn how to use some of the features successfully, but I am impressed with it.
And I think you did a great job covering the book module inside the video series as well, showing how you can change the layouts, move photos in different positions, add text, change the number of photos in any given book page for blurb. Yeah, it's a great module. And I guess my caveat, because that was another one of my yawners too. And the reason why I had said that was a yawner was I personally think the book module should have been there as a 3X update. I don't think that should have been something that was held off to Lightroom 4. And I'll still hold true to that. I still think that should have been there as a dot update for version 3 because the capability has been there for a while. My caveat to that for the books module is if you're going to add a book module, allow third-party APIs to access it. Because like you said, if someone's not on board with Blurb,
right,
allow an API to be developed for another printer. And granted, I do have a sponsor from Nations Photo Lab, and they've done a lot of work with me, and I've done a lot of work with them. And it's all very simple. So when you go to do book printing, any kind of book printing, usually there's a dedicated Java thing that you got to download that'll show you the book layout. And then you adjust the book layout and say how you want it, then you upload all the photos. That's basically what this is inside of Lightroom. It's taking that layout schematic for whoever the vendor is and inserting it as a module inside of Lightroom, which is fine. My whole point, though, is I think they should allow third-party development to plug into that so you don't have to do just Blurb. So you could do Blurb, you could do Nations Photo Lab, you could do MPix, you could do, you know, whoever your printer is. Because by limiting it to Blurb, you're kind of limiting the audience that's going to be able to take advantage of that.
Yeah, I completely agree with you. I really want to see that as well. I'm hoping that this is just a starting place.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I guess that kind of ties into the next part of our discussion points here is this whole question of, well, okay, yeah, Lightroom 4 is great, but if you look at Photoshop development or the Creative Suite development, you know, how many iterations of that are there? I think they just did their 20th anniversary, so they're on version 20 or something like that.
22.
And that 22
years.
Yeah.
22 years.
22 years before we're on 5.5 of the Creative Suite. And before that, there were, I think, 7 or 8 different versions. So there's been a substantial amount of development within the Adobe family of products. And we know that there's going to be another version of Lightroom at some point, right? I think it's a foregone conclusion that we will see a Lightroom 5. You know, it's gained enough traction within the photography community that I think it's pretty much here to stay as a workflow option for a lot of photographers.
Absolutely.
So that being said, what do you? I guess that kind of segues the conversation a little to think more about. This is great what Lightroom 4 is doing, but what's missing? Are there, you know? I guess the question more is there anything missing that you'd like to see in Lightroom 4? Because every product, let's face it, every product has its pros, has its cons. We've been talking about these pros, everything that's great about Lightroom 4, but what about the next iteration, like a 4.1 or a version 5? You know, what would be another game-changing feature or huge advantage feature for Lightroom 5 or dot update, whatever, that would help improve your post-production when it comes to photography? And I've got three, and I mentioned one of them already, so I'll come back to that in a minute. But I kind of wanted to let, since Laura's obviously our special guest, I wanted to give her first dibs on this platform about add-on features for Lightroom from here.
Yeah, I don't want to really phrase it as what I would have liked to see in Lightroom 4 because I'm not disappointed in what they've put in. But definitely, what would I like to see in the future? Well, number one on my list was what we not number one in terms of priority, but one of the things is what we talked about in terms of more manufacturers' flexibility in the book module. Mm-hmm. Number two, I start thinking about, as a photographer, what do I still need to go to Photoshop for? So, number two on my list, I don't know if this is realistic to ever have, but I want to be able to do panoramas and true merging of exposures in HDR right in Lightroom. Again, I don't know.
Panos in Lightroom. Interesting. I hadn't thought of that. I'm going to add that to the show notes.
Because
panos in Lightroom.
The one one of the main things that we can't do in Lightroom is bring together multiple photos.
Right.
So I'd love to see them go in that direction.
And I would agree with you, but I would also say, in Adobe's defense, to a limited degree, in Photoshop CS5, and now 5.5, because that's where they're currently at, they've made that workflow where you do the round trip from Lightroom to Photoshop and then back to Lightroom. Two things. They've made that workflow much easier, much more fluid. And then number two, the panorama options in Lightroom, or I'm sorry, in Photoshop 5, much more improved over CS4.
Absolutely.
So it's not in Lightroom yet, but the round trip to Photoshop has actually improved. So I think the next step is taking that workflow and improving it even more by adding that panorama feature in Lightroom so you don't have to do the round trip. And my guess is it's probably going to happen. It's probably more likely to happen than not.
Right.
Because I think they were doing their first release or first test, if you will, inside Photoshop to see how well it took. Mm. And I think it's taken very well. So that'll probably be next in their R&D schedule to add to Lightroom.
Yeah, and it means, more people don't have to spend $600 for Photoshop. I have to say that when Lightroom 1 was out, a mentor and instructor of mine, George DeWolf, was just mm-hmm. raving about Lightroom 1. But he said, it's got to have local adjustments. You have to be able to dodge and burn. And I said, George, you're crazy. Lightroom
never
will
happen.
Never have local adjustments, because then why would people buy Photoshop? But
right.
Sure enough, Lightroom 2 came out with local adjustments, and I was very happy to be wrong on that. So every time I think that Adobe won't build something into Lightroom because it will cut out Photoshop sales, they in fact, keep making Lightroom more and more powerful. So
definitely. And I think it's kind of interesting how Adobe's shifting things here, because when CS5 came out, or not CS5, when they made the announcement for CS6, which is coming out, I think, sometime this fall, they were talking about the upgrade options, how they're dropping the three versions back, and there's a change in the pricing module and stuff like that. I really think they're trying to shift the focus on Photoshop away from photographers. They're saying this isn't really something that was ever intended for photographers. When Photoshop first came out, that's not what it was meant for. It was meant for graphic designers. And they're trying to, I think anyway, because I don't know, Adobe doesn't call me and tell me these things. But I think they're trying to move that concept or push that concept back out more intensely by saying, look, we're going to restrict this. This is what this is going to do moving forward, which is kind of discouraging for photographers. But Photoshop was never meant for photographers. Mm-hmm. So that's why I think they're doing that. And by making more of these adjustment brush features available in Lightroom, like you said, it's going to move more photographers towards Lightroom for their dedicated workflow solution and not use Photoshop. And that way Photoshop can continue down a different R&D path. That's just my take as to why they're doing that. But like I said, Adobe doesn't call and tell me these things. So
yeah, me
know.
Neither, unfortunately. But that would make sense
they
to
don't.
Me.
Yeah. Yeah. See, I thought they talked to everyone but me. Yeah. I don't know, so. So yeah, that's a definitely a good point about panos inside a Lightroom. That's definitely something I think we'll see in the future. The books plugin was the first one. Panos in Lightroom is number two for you. Did you have anything else you'd expect to see in future releases?
Well, I think we've got to see more enhancements in the slideshow module. It's really? A great basic module, but compared to the other slideshow programs out there, it's pretty limited. You know, for example, not being able to embed a video into your slideshow. You know, now we have extensive video support in Lightroom, but you still can't carry that over. More flexibility in design. You know, to be honest with you, I don't use the slideshow a lot myself, but I'm continually hearing from other users that it just needs a lot more functionality, and people are often disappointed that it hasn't made it into these latest updates.
It's interesting you mention that, because for the longest time, what I've been using, I think what a lot of people use in the as far as slideshow presentations go, is they use that ProShow Gold plugin. What's the company? Is it Photodex? Is that their name?
I'm not sure.
I think it's Photodex. We'll put that in the show notes. If you're interested in doing something right now with slideshows, there's a great piece of software out there called ProShow, and I'm pretty sure the company name is Photodex, but we'll include a link to that in the show notes. But that, for the most part, has been the standard for slideshow presentations. So I think Laura's hit on a very good point here, that that's something that really does need to be developed more.
Right.
Because right now the whole concept here is trying to get a standalone application for photographers, so we don't have to export to Photoshop to do content aware scaling, I just revealed mine. We don't have to, we don't have to export to Photoshop to do a pano adjustment, or we don't have to export to, I might as well just say it, Photoshop to do content aware scale, or we don't have to export to ProShow to do a slideshow. You know, the whole idea is we want one application for photographers.
Right.
And that's, I think, where they need to go if they want to develop Lightroom further, is develop that slideshow module.
Yeah, and it's great for us amateurs who are just showing our friends, photos in a slideshow. But when it gets to the, when you want a professional level presentation, that's where we need some updates. So.
Right. And I think that's something that's probably been, I shouldn't say a deal breaker issue for professional photographers that are out there trying to, display their work in a professional setting. But it's something that's been limiting thus far, because right now they have two applications they got to go through.
Right.
And reducing that down would just help more people than not in the long run. And the price drop, too. That was another big thing, right? The price drops down to $150. So even if in Lightroom 5 pricing had to adjust back up again, and it included a more developed slideshow module, I think that would be a justifiable reason for the price increase.
For some people.
I don't know.
Yeah.
For some people, yeah. There's always going to be different opinions there. But, yeah, I think you hit the nail on the head there. Did you have any others you wanted to share as far as future development?
I do have one more, but based on our chat beforehand, it's very similar and related to yours. So I'm going to turn it over to you on that, and then I'll just add additional comments. But it's a big one.
Okay, well, my comment that I had mentioned to Laura, and I think all of you know that listen to the show, we typically share notes in advance so we can come across and make sure we're sounding somewhat intelligently. It's no secret that there's a little bit of pre-production when it comes to podcasts. And I said I want to talk about future, options that we might want to see, and I let her know what my thoughts were so she could set up hers as well. And one of my thoughts was adding content-aware fill or content-aware adjustments inside of Lightroom. Then I mentioned to her during the pre-show scheduling that I think it makes sense to have that in the adjustment brush. And the whole content aware fill and content aware replace option is there inside of Photoshop, where it's kind of like the clone stamp tool, where you can lasso over something and do a content aware fill. Now, granted, the adjustment brush and the features that are currently available inside of Lightroom are not horrible. you can do a lot with them, but it still, in my opinion anyway, is very time consuming, because you still have to dial things in and blend things a little bit, and it's more time consuming, I think, than it has to be. And with content aware adjustment features of Photoshop, it's clearly capable of doing a lot of photographic editing that a lot of photographers use. And the point, the image I'll reference, and I even showed this to Laura, was my Wordless Wednesday post from last week. Post number 6 was a sunrise back in Charleston. And it's a great shot. Everyone liked the shot. But what you don't know is before I printed and published that to the web, there was a flag in the upper left corner of that image that was attached to a house that was just out of frame. And the flag dropped in the frame, and it took up probably about 15% on the left border of the image there, and it was very distracting. And when I went to export it, I completely forgot, for some reason, I completely forgot to make the adjustments, and I forgot to do the round trip to Photoshop is what it was. So when I went to export, and then I started to post it, I was like, oh, shoot, I forgot to do that. So I had to go back and do that round trip again. So if content-aware fill is added to Lightroom, that round trip becomes less necessary. And it just further hits the point home that, you know, we want a dedicated app where we don't have to export anywhere to do any other edits. And content-aware fill is the one thing, I think, for me personally, that's missing from Lightroom as far as photographic editing. And my suggestion there is to put it in the adjustment brush. So that's where we kind of shifted to what Laura's thoughts were on adjustment brush changes for Lightroom. So I'll shift it back to you now for your thoughts on the adjustment brush.
Yeah. Well, I thought that was a great idea to add that into the adjustment brush. What was on my list was enhancements to the spot removal tool. So putting it in the adjustment brush, we're accomplishing the same thing. But I think that the spot removal tool, as it is in Lightroom, is a lot more powerful than most people think it is. You know, I find that the more I challenge it to do, the more that I find it can do. So, you know, I can remove significant objects, and I can reduce the appearance of circles under people's eyes and wrinkles and things like that.
Sure.
But it has its limits. It's just a circle. So to be able to have, you know, the patch tool from Photoshop, something that allows you
awesome.
To select something that's not a circle and specify where you want to copy it from in the photo. Adobe's been demonstrating a sneak peek of a content-aware patch tool that looks like it's coming in Photoshop CS6. So build that in and build in the content-aware fill in the adjustment brush, and I would be thrilled.
Well, I guess that brings up a question. Maybe I'm ignorant on this, but I thought you could specify on the spot removal tool, you could specify even in Lightroom where it does that spot removal from.
Absolutely, yeah.
From the origin and destination.
It's just the circle that's the limitation.
Oh, I see what you're saying. Okay.
And now with CS6, the sneak peeks that I've seen, the patch tool has or can have, I don't know if you have to turn on a feature, but can have that content-aware logic that makes it so much more powerful.
Agreed. So, it sounds like number 4 on both of our lists then would be updates or additions to or making the adjustment brush and the spot removal tool more powerful. Content aware, where that would fit in there, you know, it's 6 of 1, half dozen of the other, it sounds like. You know, it doesn't really matter where they put it, whether it's in the adjustment brush or the spot removal. Maybe under both. Maybe it could be a toggle.
Mm-hmm.
Like an option. Like, do you want this adjustment to be content aware? Do you want the spot removal to be content aware? So it can be like an algorithm that's just added to whatever feature you happen to be using.
Yeah.
So, are there any others that you would care to add on for future iterations of Lightroom, or was that pretty much it for yours?
The only other one that I can think of right now is enhancing the print module. It's, with Lightroom 3, you can create custom layouts with multiple photos on the page any way you want. You're pretty limited at this point in terms of being able to add text. So to have more freeform text control over where you put text, how much text, formatting would be great.
Right.
Now, I think that starts to blur into, well, the book module versus the print module. The book module at this point are set templates for your pages that you choose. The print module allows you to freeform layout photos. So somehow to get all that functionality for every application would be fabulous.
Right. And I do also think that there's kind of an interesting line that we're probably approaching here when it comes to what else may be in there for future iterations of Lightroom, because the more full-featured it gets, in my opinion anyway, the more bloated or heavy the application gets. So if you look at early versions of Photoshop, for example, you know, they installed quick, they loaded quick, they didn't have a big footprint on your hard drive. And when you look at CS5, 5.5, CS6, it's like a 2 gig install file.
Wow.
You know, a 2 gigabyte install, and that's just the installation files. And then it extends out from there with every plugin and add-on that you have to Photoshop. The same is starting to hold true for Lightroom. You know, as this gets more full-featured, it's taking, number one, the download is larger, the installation is larger, and the more resources it's going to take to operate it. When they made the move to Lightroom 4, for example, they dropped 32-bit support. And they did that for a reason.
Right.
You know, number one, 32-bit operating systems are going away. And number two, in 64-bit operating systems, you can take advantage of more memory. And by having access to additional memory allows Lightroom 4 to operate more efficiently because it is getting more intensive. So as we start talking about wish lists here and, you know, dream features for Lightroom, we kind of have to temper that a little bit, I think, in understanding that, hey, you know, yeah, this would be a great tool to have, but are we willing to sacrifice performance to have functionality?
I think that's an excellent point. So, in addition, it also gets harder to learn. It becomes overwhelming for people. I mean, Photoshop right. is overwhelming for people because there's so much there. So
such a learning curve, exactly. Yeah, that's a great point, is that learning curve, the more features that are added, the learning curve is going to increase exponentially. Yeah, that's a great point. I hadn't thought of that.
It keeps me employed, but I want I want people to be able to, you know, to learn.
Sure.
Easy.
Well, the last thing I was going to add, and this is, you know, keeping in mind, you know, tempering irrational exuberance or dream features with performance issues. The one thing I'd like to see, and the last time I talked to Tom Hogarty about this, when Lightroom 3 was released, he gave me an indication that this probably wasn't going to happen. But I would like to see, since Lightroom 4 is primarily a digital library for workflow management, whether it's photos or videos, is fine. But because it's an Adobe product, I would like to see my library include PDF files. I don't necessarily need to edit them, but I would like to be able to see Adobe PDF files. And here's why. Because if I can preview videos in there, or if I'm doing photo editing in there, and someone, I don't know, maybe a Lightroom educator puts out 55 videos and has some PDFs,
right,
like a README file or something like that, and I'm importing all that into Lightroom because I want to look at these videos in Lightroom and edit and work in Lightroom at the same time, if there's PDF files that are like supplementary educational materials, I'd like to be able to view those inside of Lightroom too.
Mm-hmm. That's a great point.
But like I said, Tom Hogarty indicated that probably was not going to happen. So,
yes.
And that's coming from Lightroom or Adobe's mouth directly. So
yeah, you would think that it would be very easy, but I've learned that what I think and what it is in reality technically are completely different things.
Yes, that's more often the case for me than not. My thoughts versus reality there. Well, great. That sounds like I know we're going a little long here, but I did want to take a minute to answer a few listener questions that came in through Twitter, and actually some questions I had from Laura, because she's done a lot more work with Lightroom 4 than I have. But there were a couple questions that came up, and one of them, which I don't know why I always thought this, but when I was watching her video, she started talking about the preferences files and the preferences settings. And I remembered seeing something about, I think it was it under file handling? I think it was under file handling, where it speaks to camera raw cache settings. And I was watching through the tutorials to kind of prep myself for the podcast here, and she happened to mention that, and for some reason something clicked for me that previously hadn't. And I guess the question I have, which I now of course know the answer to, but the question I have for you, Laura, is whether or not that cache file needs to match the amount of RAM that you have on your system.
No, absolutely not. I think the maximum size for this cache is something like 250 gigabytes. I may be wrong, but I don't think anybody has that much memory on their system. So this this is actually...
That's only in servers.
Yeah, right. So this is actually hard drive space that it's using. Mm-hmm. So.
And it's a great point, and we were having this discussion... Again, this was an offline discussion, and I thought it was worthy of mentioning here as kind of a listener Q&A, or I guess a host Q and guest A. Because I had the question and Laura answered it for me. I previously had thought that the cache had to be set to the amount of your RAM because that's what sets your page file inside of Windows. So for those of you that are familiar with Windows, your page file typically needs to match the amount of RAM that you have. And for some reason, I had this mental block that the Lightroom cache needed to match that, and it doesn't. And what the advantage here, well, I guess that's the question, is what's the advantage of setting a higher cache?
Well, this is for your raw files. And as you go into the develop module, as you select a photo in the develop module for the first time, Lightroom has to go out and read that raw file and render it and interpret it so that you can work on it. That takes time, and you see that little loading sign. And for some of us, that loading can be a significant amount of time. So once Lightroom loads it for the first time, it stores it in this temporary cache so that the next time you come back to this photo, it doesn't take so long to load. So the larger your cache, the more photos you can have
in there
that it won't take so long to load. So it stores your most recent photos. How many photos is based on the size of that cache.
Right. And after she pointed that out to me in the video tutorial here, and then I guess that also proves a point that anyone can learn from anyone, right? So after she pointed that out to me, I went back and made the adjustment to the cache file. Mine was set to 3 gigabytes. It's now set to 15.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah,
Lightroom is operating a lot faster now.
Great. So, now, yeah. I want to make one point that with Lightroom 4, Adobe's new embed fast load data option for the Adobe DNG raw file format, I don't believe it's using this camera raw cache because it's embedding a preview inside of the DNG file to be used in the develop module. So that will very much increase the loading on DNG files.
Right. So, and that's a great point. That makes a lot of sense there. And, of course, the DNG discussion is something that probably would be better suited for another show because that can be a whole show in and of itself.
Yes.
There's lots of differing opinions out there on DNG. Some people think it's Adobe trying to take over the world. Others think it's the most useful thing since sliced bread. Like I said, it's a discussion for another show.
Yep. Close that can of worms.
Yeah, close that can of worms right now. We're not even going to open it. So the other question that I've actually had on occasion, and I'll give Laura a chance to answer this as well, is also in the preferences setting, and that speaks to camera serial numbers. And one of the options that's inside there, and this is not just for Lightroom 4, this is I think this has been around since Lightroom 2, where you can make your default specific to your camera serial number.
Right.
And what that basically means is that the default settings that are used as far as the develop module goes, so where the defaults are set for images. And the question I had gotten from a listener was, how do I set the serial number for the camera? And the answer is you don't.
Correct.
Lightroom will do that for you. And where this comes into play is for people that do shooting with multiple cameras, right? Because they think, oh, well, I don't want to apply the serial number from my Nikon D700 to my Nikon D70. You know, I don't want that camera type put in for another photo that was taken on with a different camera. And the answer is you don't have to. Lightroom will make that for you. Lightroom will make that determination for you.
Right.
So is there anything you'd care to add there with regard to the default settings inside of there? Or was that sufficient, I guess? I probably should let you answer that. I'm sorry.
No, I mean, we both may say the same thing. But if you check that box, then for all new imports, well, if you check that box and then you set a new default, let's say your 40D needs a default higher level of noise reduction than your new, you know, fancy camera. So you choose a photo from your 40D, set that noise reduction level, make that the default, and because you have this box checked in preferences, that your defaults will be specific to camera number, camera serial number. It will only, I think you said it better.
Well, there's different ways of educating, and there's always different ways to present material and information. So
yeah.
As long as we're getting to the same conclusion here, that's probably sufficient for listener Q&A time. Yeah.
But I would say that you can set your defaults specific to camera serial number and also specific to ISO, which I think is huge.
That's added in Lightroom 4.
That's been around as well. But
has it?
Yes.
I'd have to bounce back.
I'm not sure about Lightroom 2.
How do you remember these things? I don't know how people remember differences.
I can't remember what I did yesterday, but I can remember Lightroom preferences.
So let me launch Lightroom 3 here.
But with the ability to set defaults for different ISO settings, of course,
at
ISO 1600, you can apply more noise reduction as your default.
Did not know that. It was in Lightroom 3. For some reason, I thought that was new in Lightroom 4.
Yeah.
Huh. Interesting. Well, the last question that came in from, I think this one was an email. I don't remember who it was, so apologies for not getting your name on the show, because I like to usually try and do that. But it's early right after a time change, so sorry. But the question that came in was a question about catalog settings. And it kind of ties into the preferences discussion here, is what's the difference between Lightroom preferences and catalog settings? Like, what is it? I guess the basic question is, what is a catalog? And I thought this might be one that'd be good for Laura to answer as well. So, Liff, you have a minute to possibly help out with answering this question on what the catalog settings are and why we would want to possibly have different catalogs.
Sure.
That'd be good.
So preferences are global to the entire Lightroom program. Catalog settings are specific to individual catalogs. Now, I recommend that most people, including myself, have one Lightroom catalog with all of our photos in it. If you think about the public library analogy, where you have your stacks of books and then you have one centrally located catalog that stores all of the information about your photos and allows you to access all of the books, that's right. What we're talking of in terms of the catalog. It stores all of the work you're doing on your photos, and it allows you to actually see the photos in Lightroom. Now, with the public library analogy, you could have one centrally located catalog, let's say a web catalog, that could access books in many different locations throughout Seattle, where I live, for example.
Right.
But to be able to access books across all those locations is a tremendous benefit of one centrally located catalog. In the Lightroom world, having all of your photos in one catalog means that you can pull together all of your 5-star photos or all of your 2009 photos. Some
right.
people start splitting out their photos into separate catalogs. So a wedding catalog, a portraits catalog, a landscape catalog.
I think annual is the way most people tend. Well, I shouldn't say most people. What you just said, 2009 catalog, that's how I set up my catalog. So I'll do a different catalog for every year.
Okay. I don't think that there's one right answer for everybody. But issue that I see is that when you have different catalogs, you basically have a brick wall between these groups of photos.
Right.
So how do you pull together all of your favorite photos for the past 10 years if you have them split out by year?
Right. And that was the problem I ran into. So, yeah, I think that's a good point. Yeah. But I'm sorry, continue. I'll stop talking now.
No, I think that's the basic point. That's why I encourage people to have all of their photos in one catalog. I certainly have heard exceptions where it makes complete sense. If you do work for a company and they want that work kept, completely separate from your personal work, you want that brick wall.
Right.
But I think for most of us, it just gets in the way.
Right. It just made me think of another change I'd like to see in a future iteration of Lightroom 2. The ability to network a catalog.
Yeah.
Just share it on a network. That's been an ongoing one, but
I
digress there. So, yeah, I think that's a good answer as to what the difference is between Lightroom settings, which is global to all of Lightroom, the software application, and catalog settings. And like you said, you can set up catalogs in a multiple number of ways, whether it's by genre, by year, whatever. your preferences, depending on your style of photography and organization, entirely up to you.
You know, some people do that to keep their thinking they're keeping their photos organized that way. But I think that's what folders are for, that's what keywords are for, and that's what collections are for. So within a catalog, there are many ways to help you separate out different types of photos.
Right, right. Yeah, I think that, that's a good way to phrase that. And if you want to look at your catalog settings, I don't know if Laura wants to. I'll take it. If you want to change or adjust your catalog settings, you can look at those specific features under the Edit menu inside of Windows. So if you go to Edit and then down to Catalog Settings, or if you're on the Mac, you can go to Lightroom, which is also in the upper left-hand corner, and go down to Catalog Settings there as well. When you pull that up, you can see that you can specify where that catalog is saved, how often it's backed up. You can look at file handling details specific to your catalog, whether it's a standard preview size, the preview quality, how long it keeps previews, that sort of stuff. And then the last portion in catalogs is the metadata portion, where you can offer suggestions from recently entered values, you can include developed settings, all that sort of stuff. Go in there, you can look at all the options. It's a pretty straightforward set of settings for catalogs as well as the software options. So they're good tools either way, no matter how you end up using your catalogs. So okay, I think that pretty much wraps up the show. As we scroll out with our outro here, Laura, I guess the question I have is, if people have more questions for you after this podcast is done, and hopefully they will, because you've got a lot of good resources and material, where can they find you? You mentioned your website, Laura Shu. Do you have like a social media footprint people can refer to as well?
Yes. On Twitter, I'm Lightroom_Laura.
Lightroom Laura.
And
okay.
On Facebook, you can find me at Laura Shu Digital Workshops for Photographers.
Laura Shu, Digital Workshops for Photographers. Now, I guess here's another question for you. When you do your digital workshops, do you stay local to the Seattle area or do you travel? How does that setup go for you? I should know the answer to this, but I didn't prep enough, so my apologies.
I do most of my workshops locally here in Seattle. Sometimes I do private workshops in other locations as well.
Okay. I know a lot of times some people have asked me to do a one-on-one session with them, on different features of photography, whether it's working inside a Lightroom, working inside a Photoshop, HDR work, compositional work, whatever. And oftentimes it's feasible to do a webinar or a private WebEx session where you can share your screen, do that kind of stuff. So that's an option that I know is available from my end, and I'm sure that may also apply in your case as well, probably on a more limited basis, though.
Yeah.
So,
yeah, I actually
do
a lot of private instruction over the web.
There you go. So yeah, I think the internet has really made accessibility for training, individualized training, much easier than how it used to be. So that's one advantage of having these high-speed internet connections we have today. Great. Okay, well, we've got our website. We've got your social media footprint. We've got the DVD series that we announced at the beginning of the show, as well as the Creative Live series that's coming out at the end of the month. And last but not least, we have one final announcement to make. We've been talking about her DVD series. This is 55 videos, over 10 hours of workshop instruction. And Laura has agreed to share a copy of that with some lucky listener. And whether you're listening to the podcast now or if you have it in your archive and listen to it a little later, this will be the next prize in our monthly photo contest series. And it's pretty amazing, pretty generous of Laura to offer this up. So first off, thank you very much for offering it up. It's quite exciting. I know it sounds like I'm blowing smoke and all that sort of stuff, but this really is probably one of the better DVD, or I shouldn't say DVD, but one of the better video series that I've seen out there on just instruction in general. I was talking to Laura about this. I've seen a lot of stuff where it's teaching a quick tip or a photo recipe or something like that versus a broader concept of education and building a foundation. And I really do think that her material speaks more to the educational aspect of photography. So it really will give you a foundation that you can work from And having that foundation will just make you better, not only in your photography, but also in your post-production, really help you gain an understanding of what the different things do so that you can then explore and move into your creativity zone a lot quicker. So that's definitely something to take away from this. And the Adobe, it's the Adobe Photo, let me get this right, the Adobe Photoshop Lightroom 4, The Fundamentals and Beyond. It's a workshop on video with Laura Hsu. This is, what's it normally go for? It normally goes for $50, I think. $50 plus tax. $49.95.
For the
You're under $50.
Yeah, $49.95 for the download and $57.95 for the DVD.
$57.95 for the DVD, $49.95 for the download. And this will be, we're in March now, so this will be the April giveaway. And we'll probably be putting this podcast out by the end of March to give people enough time to really check out some of the content that you have out there. Your website, again, laurahsu.com, a great resource to go out and check out what she's able to offer here. Just some fantastic stuff. Again, very generous of you to offer up a copy of your DVD workshop series here. So,
my pleasure.
Thank you very much for that. And good luck to the lucky listener that's going to win a copy of this. This is quite exciting. It's great to see that kind of education being shared out occasionally. So quite awesome of you to do that. I guess that pretty much wraps up our show. Did you have any other closing thoughts or anything you wanted to share from your social media side? Did we cover it all?
Oh, I think we covered a lot. The one last thing I want to mention as far as Lightroom itself, the one main new feature that I forgot to say that I'm really excited about is that they've cut the prices tremendously. So
right.
It broadens
That's
the
huge.
Market, and it makes the upgrade decision so much easier.
I'll go ahead and add that as an extra bonus. extra add is price drop. Because, you know, I think that – and you made a very good point. You know, in today's day and age, saving money is always a good thing.
But beyond,
and we can kind of take it for granted. So, yeah.
But beyond that, I just want to thank you, Jason. I mean, it's been an honor to be able to participate. Yeah. I love your blog and all of your resources. And you know, again, it's an honor to be listed amongst your podcast interviews.
Well, it's been a pleasure having you, and thank you, everyone, for tuning in to this episode of the Learning Digital Photography Podcast.